What if the secret to happiness wasn't found in tropical paradises or wealth-filled metropolises, but in a small northern European country with more pigs than people and notoriously dreary weather? Denmark has consistently topped international happiness rankings since 1973, creating a phenomenon that has puzzled economists and social scientists worldwide. When Malene Rydahl left her native Denmark at 18, she didn't realize she was leaving behind the happiest country on earth. Years later, living in France, she began to understand what makes Danish society exceptional. The Danish happiness model has attracted attention from political leaders like David Cameron and Nicolas Sarkozy, who have sought to measure their nation's well-being beyond GDP. With high taxes, up to 56%, and cold, dark winters, Denmark's consistent happiness ranking challenges conventional wisdom about what makes life good, offering profound lessons for individuals and societies alike. In rural Denmark, farmers routinely leave produce stands unattended, with money boxes for customers to pay and make their own change. This isn't naive optimism. It's a reflection of Denmark's world record level of social trust. According to research by Professor Gert Tingard Svensson, 78% of Danes trust those around them, compared to a global average of just 25%. This trust extends beyond interpersonal relationships to institutions, with 84% of Danes expressing confidence in their government, police, and civil services. The benefits of this trust permeate every aspect of Danish life. At the Copenhagen Opera House, patrons leave expensive coats in unattended checkrooms without worry. Lost wallets are typically returned with money intact. A Reader's Digest experiment found 100% of wallets were returned in the Danish city of Aalborg. Perhaps most striking to outsiders, Danish parents leave babies in strollers outside cafes while they sit inside, confident in the community's watchfulness. This trust creates tangible economic advantages. Business transactions require fewer contracts, lawyers, and oversight mechanisms, reducing costs and increasing efficiency. The welfare state functions effectively because citizens trust their tax money will be used appropriately. Denmark consistently ranks as having the world's lowest corruption rate, with over 90% of Danes considering bribery completely unjustifiable. When corruption does occur, as in the case of Mayor Peter Brixtoft's expense scandal, punishment is swift and severe. This foundation of trust in fellow citizens, in institutions, in the fundamental fairness of society creates a powerful platform for collective well-being that many other nations struggle to establish. Trust isn't just a pleasant social quality in Denmark, it's the invisible infrastructure upon which their happiness is built. The Danish education system operates on a fundamentally different philosophy than many achievement-oriented nations. Rather than focusing on creating an academic elite, Danish schools prioritize developing the complete personality and potential of every student. Education is free and accessible to all, with students receiving monthly grants to support their studies regardless of family income. Danish classrooms emphasize independence and critical thinking over rote memorization. Children are encouraged to experience things themselves and form their own viewpoints, preparing them to understand both their rights and responsibilities in a society built on equality, solidarity, and liberty. This approach aligns with cognitive science research showing that the brain learns better through experimentation and active participation than through passive knowledge reception. Denmark offers unique educational institutions that complement traditional schooling. About 15% of Danish teenagers attend efterskole, residential afterschools for ages 14 to 18, where they develop independence and explore interests beyond academics. Studies show these students are more likely to complete further education later. Similarly, high school, folk high schools, focus on instilling the desire to learn without the pressure of competition or formal diplomas. While Danish students may not outperform their Chinese counterparts on standardized tests, the system prioritizes student well-being and personal development over elite performance. Education is adjusted to suit the majority rather than high achievers, ensuring no one is left behind. The system's main acknowledged weakness is potentially underdeveloping the abilities of the most gifted 5% of students. Higher education continues this philosophy, remaining free and subsidized with monthly grants of 5,900 krona, $890, for all students. Danish schools emphasize collaborative learning through group examinations and provide comprehensive career guidance services. Unlike many countries where education is primarily viewed as preparation for economic competition, Danish education aims to create independent, curious citizens who can think for themselves and find fulfillment beyond material success. The Danish culture of independence begins remarkably early, with children gaining autonomy through work and financial responsibility from a young age. Nearly 70% of Danish teenagers between 13 and 17 work outside school, rising to over 80% after 17. Unlike in other countries where students work primarily to pay tuition, Danish youth work mainly to gain independence from parental financial control, regardless of family wealth. This early self-sufficiency translates into rapid household independence. Almost 70% of Danish youth leave home at 18, compared to much higher rates of young adults living with parents in countries like France, 62%, Spain and Italy, over 80%. This prevents excessive parental influence and fosters self-reliance that carries into adulthood. Financial independence starts even earlier. Many Danish children have their own bank accounts from a young age. The author shares how at 11, she independently opened a bank account and bought shares in Bang & Olufsen, illustrating the early financial autonomy Danish children develop. This independence gives Danish children wings and makes them bold, as demonstrated by her persistence in securing her first job by repeatedly calling a company executive until granted an interview. The cultural value placed on independence is deeply embedded in Danish identity, exemplified by Christiania, Copenhagen's autonomous district founded in 1971 as a free town with its own rules. Even Danish fairy tales by Hans Christian Andersen, like The Little Mermaid and The Ugly Duckling, center on the freedom to become who you truly are, a cornerstone of Danish happiness. While this independence is empowering, it comes with responsibilities. The relatively high suicide rates in Scandinavian countries suggest the burden of personal responsibility that accompanies such autonomy. Yet Danes fundamentally believe that setting children free to develop their own personalities from a young age leads to adult fulfillment. This balance of freedom and responsibility creates adults who are self-sufficient yet connected to their community, capable of making independent choices while understanding their place in the larger social fabric. The American dream of social mobility is ironically more achievable in Denmark than in America itself. According to OECD studies on the Great Gatsby Curve, it's significantly easier to climb the social ladder in Scandinavian countries than in France, Italy, Britain, or the United States. Denmark's highly redistributive tax system and universal education access creates greater equality of opportunity than in most other developed nations. This mobility thrives in Denmark's egalitarian society. While private schools exist, with 87% government funding and modest parental contributions of 150 to 200 euros monthly, they often include scholarship students from diverse backgrounds. The author shares her experience with a friend from a challenging home environment who attended the same private school on scholarship. Despite equal educational opportunities, her friend eventually dropped out of high school, demonstrating that while Denmark provides financial equality, it cannot eliminate all obstacles from disadvantaged backgrounds. Denmark isn't the ideal place to get rich due to its redistributive tax system and culture that doesn't prioritize wealth. In 2011, only 60,000 Danes, out of 5.6 million, earned over 1 million kroner, $151,000. Yet social mobility remains robust. The author interviewed a successful lawyer from working-class origins who credited Denmark's system for his rise, noting that about 60% of partners at his prestigious firm came from middle-class backgrounds, with only 20% from privileged families. Danish social mobility isn't just about becoming wealthy. It's about having the freedom to forge your own path regardless of origins. The author shares examples including Karen Blixen, who left wealth behind to farm in Kenya, and a former executive who happily became a taxi driver, both embodying the Danish belief that no matter where you start out in life, all paths are possible. This combination of economic opportunity and freedom from social expectation creates a society where people can truly choose their path rather than having it determined by birth or circumstance, perhaps the truest form of the American dream, ironically realized in a democratic socialist society. Danes approach life with modest expectations, embracing phrases like "with moderation," "not so bad," and "good enough." This realistic outlook, some might call it low expectations, is central to Danish happiness. By not expecting to be the best or win accolades, Danes find greater satisfaction with their circumstances and experience heightened joy when success does come. Denmark's history of lost greatness has shaped this realistic national outlook. After being a European power under King Canute the Great in the 11th century and maintaining significant influence from the 13th to 17th centuries, Denmark experienced four centuries of defeats and territorial losses. This historical trajectory taught Danes not to expect greatness or victory, making them more satisfied with the status quo and delighted by unexpected successes. This approach was perfectly illustrated in June 1992, when Denmark's football team unexpectedly won the European Championship after being called up last minute to replace Yugoslavia. This victory exemplified the Danish approach to life: unflappable management of expectations, no one dared dream of winning, combined with modesty when success arrived. Some experts suggest this rare triumph still contributes to Danish happiness today. A 2006 British Medical Journal paper found Danes to be Europe's happiest people, with over 66% claiming to be very satisfied, compared to Europe's 50% average. The paper concluded their low expectations were a primary reason for this happiness advantage. Being realistic doesn't mean abandoning dreams. As Harvard professor Tal Ben-Shahar explains, true realism means accepting life's obstacles while still pursuing meaningful goals. This realistic idealism helps people persist through hardship because they balance dreams with acceptance of difficult realities. Psychotherapist Sylvie Tenenbaum notes that we must renounce impossible dreams that hinder our development and accept reality to find true fulfillment. Unlike countries with histories of colonial expansion and world power status, Denmark's modest expectations lead to less disappointment and more happiness. This realistic outlook may also stem from Denmark's Protestant heritage, with 85% of Danes being Christian, mostly Protestant, which, according to Max Weber, fostered discipline, frugality, and contentment with less. The vast majority of Danes strongly support high taxes and the welfare state, a remarkable stance considering Denmark has the world's highest tax revenue as percentage of GDP, 50.9%, compared to the OECD average of 34.4%, and a marginal tax rate of 56.2%. A 2012 survey revealed 70% of Danes are satisfied with the balance between taxes paid and services received. Only 20% think they pay too much, while 12% believe they don't pay enough. This deep commitment to solidarity is historically rooted, exemplified by Denmark's protection of Jews during World War II, when the Danish resistance helped ferry 7,200 Jews to safety in Sweden, earning the Danish Underground Collective recognition as Righteous Among the Nations. The Danish attitude is clear. We're happy to share through taxation because we trust our government to use the money effectively for public benefit. Danes willingly share through taxes, but with an important condition: everyone must contribute fairly without freeloading. This was demonstrated in 2011 when poor Karina, highlighted by a left-wing politician as an example of Danish poverty, was revealed to receive 16,000 krona monthly in benefits, with 5,000 krona disposable income after expenses. The public was outraged not at her receiving benefits, but at the suggestion that she represented genuine poverty. The Danish welfare system distinguishes between those who can but don't want to and those who want to but can't. Recent reforms replaced unemployment benefits for under 30s with student grant-style support and required benefit recipients to contribute to community activities. The system imposes strict conditions. the unemployed must actively seek jobs, document their efforts, and accept suitable positions or risk losing benefits. Beyond financial solidarity, Denmark provides free medical coverage and demonstrates social tolerance, being the first country to allow same-sex registered partnerships in 1989, later extending adoption rights and gender-neutral marriage. However, immigration remains contentious, with concerns about new Danes potentially abusing the welfare system. Danes demonstrate remarkable civic responsibility in everyday life, from refusing to cross streets against red lights even when no cars are present, to consistently high voter turnout, 86% compared to the OECD average of 68%. This widespread civic participation demonstrates the Danish belief that happiness only matters when it's shared by everyone, that individual well-being cannot be separated from collective welfare. Danes prioritize family and leisure time so highly that even political leaders are respected for putting family first, as demonstrated when Prime Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen canceled a diplomatic meeting for personal reasons. Rather than harming his reputation, this incident actually improved his standing with voters, who appreciated his honesty about valuing family above his temporary role as Prime Minister. Denmark has achieved the best work-life balance among OECD countries alongside Spain, with Danes devoting 69% of their day, over 16 hours, to personal activities. Only 2% of Danish employees work longer than normal hours, compared to the OECD average of 9%. The Danish system facilitates this balance through 5 weeks of paid vacation annually, additional time off for parents with sick children, and flexible working arrangements. One in four Danes adjusts their work schedule around daily routines, and 17% work partially from home to better care for their families. Danes enjoy shorter commutes than most countries, just 27 minutes daily compared to the OECD average of 38 minutes. Bicycling contributes significantly to this efficiency and flexibility, with 46% of Danes using bikes as their primary transportation to work, school, or university. In Copenhagen, half the population cycles regardless of weather or occasion, even women in dresses and heels. Cycling transcends economic boundaries, with people from all backgrounds, including 63% of parliament members, choosing bicycles for transportation. The Danes cherish their free time, with rush hour starting at 4 p.m. as people leave work to be with family. A central concept is hygge, a warm, intimate atmosphere created through candlelight, simple gatherings, and shared meals. Anthropologist Jeppe Trolle Linnet notes hygge represents Danish unity, typically involving eating and drinking in modest settings rather than luxurious ones. For Danes, togetherness extends beyond private circles to encompass society as a whole. The Danish flag, Dannebro, features prominently in celebrations, from birthday cards to Christmas decorations. Danes also love forming associations, with over 100,000 volunteer organizations valued at roughly 10% of Denmark's GDP. This commitment to community involvement, from sports clubs to charitable work, represents another key factor in Danish happiness, the ability to devote time not just to family and friends, but to causes they believe in. Danes maintain a remarkably relaxed attitude toward money, prioritizing contentment over wealth. Their welfare system provides security for basic needs, allowing them to focus on finding meaningful work rather than chasing riches. When asked about priorities, Danish teenagers overwhelmingly prefer meaningful, enjoyable work over high earnings. This mentality is illustrated through the parable of a fisherman who already enjoys the simple pleasures a businessman promises him after years of hard work. Most Danes already consider themselves privileged because of their social welfare system and focus instead on work-life balance, solidarity, and personal fulfillment. This aligns with philosopher Alan Watts's message to find what you truly want to do, regardless of money, as exemplified by the author's own career shift and her brother Jesper's entrepreneurial journey from web design to opening raw food restaurants based on his passion for health. While surveys like the Gallup World Poll show some correlation between national wealth and happiness, the relationship isn't automatic. Denmark ranks first in happiness despite being 8th in GDP per capita, while the United States ranks 13th in happiness despite having one of the highest GDPs. Beyond a threshold where basic needs are met, money has little effect on well-being. Economist Richard Layard explains this through our quick adaptation to new circumstances. Lottery winners' happiness returns to baseline after a brief surge. The most toxic threat to happiness is comparing ourselves to others through relative income. Most people prefer earning less in absolute terms if they earn more than their neighbors. This creates a vicious cycle where people constantly compare themselves to those with more, never finding contentment even when wealthy, as illustrated by the author's lunch with a rich but perpetually dissatisfied friend. The Danish approach to money offers a powerful alternative, focusing on having enough rather than having more, finding work that brings meaning rather than maximum income, and measuring success by personal fulfillment rather than financial metrics. This freedom from financial obsession may be one of Denmark's most valuable lessons for the rest of the world. Danish modesty is exemplified through the story of Noma, voted best restaurant in the world, whose team wore t-shirts with dishwasher Ali Sanko's photo when you couldn't attend the award ceremony. Chef René Redzepi remains humble about his success, believing it results from every team member's efforts. This philosophy extends throughout Danish society. Danish modesty is codified in the law of Jante, a concept that teaches Danes not to believe they're better than others. This philosophy extends everywhere, even to advertising, where Carlsberg beer is marketed with classic Danish understatement as probably the best beer in the world, while competitors elsewhere make bolder claims. At Bang & Olufsen, despite their premium market position, there was resistance to calling their products luxury, a term with negative connotations in Denmark, insisting instead on quality products. In Denmark, those who show off most are often viewed with suspicion, as exemplified by fallen business figures like Klaus Risker and Kurt Thorsen, who faced prison for fraud. This contrasts sharply with the author's experience at a Parisian restaurant, where managers explicitly instructed hostesses to seat beautiful, rich people in front and ugly, common people by the toilets, a practice unimaginable in Denmark's egalitarian culture. Danish humility extends to seeking help, explaining why Denmark ranks 7th in antidepressant consumption despite being among the happiest nations. Danes aren't ashamed to admit weakness and seek treatment, unlike in countries where depression remains taboo. This modesty is enforced socially, as the author learned when trying to jump a nightclub queue as a teenager. Rather than hurling insults, the waiting Danes simply chanted, "Back of the line, she has to go to the back of the line." From childhood, Danes are taught not to show off or stand out. As Queen Marguerite II perfectly summarized, "We are very proud of our modesty. It is our inverted megalomania. It is highly sophisticated." This modesty connects with trust, honesty, and solidarity, values that permeate Danish society and contribute significantly to their collective happiness. Danish society approaches gender equality naturally, treating boys and girls identically from childhood. The author recalls how her mother assigned household chores equally between her brother and her, with no differentiation based on gender. They received the same education, rights, and restrictions, and were encouraged to include each other in play regardless of traditional gender associations. Danish society embodies traditionally feminine values like solidarity, cooperation, benevolence, and modesty. Men embrace these qualities naturally, feeling free to express emotions and take on caregiving roles without compromising their masculinity. Parental leave is shared. Of the 52 weeks available, fathers take 2 weeks after birth, mothers take 4 weeks before and 14 after, while the remaining 32 weeks can be divided freely between parents. Danish men share household responsibilities almost equally with women, spending just 1 hour less on domestic tasks compared to much larger gender disparities in countries like France, the UK, and Mexico. This equality begins in childhood, where friendships and activities between boys and girls are natural and unsegregated, allowing children to develop based on their interests rather than gender expectations. In Denmark, there are virtually no taboos between men and women. Sexuality is discussed openly and naturally, even at dinner parties. The Danes have a remarkably relaxed attitude towards sex. They rank among the highest for one-night stands globally, and Scandinavians begin sexual activity earlier than most, age 16 in Denmark. Public nudity is also common, with women sunbathing topless in city parks. Gender equality gives Danish families complete freedom to structure relationships however they choose, cohabiting with or without children, living separately, or in blended families. Marriage rates have declined since 2008. Denmark has one of Europe's highest divorce rates, 2.6 per 1,000 inhabitants, and recently introduced an instant online divorce procedure costing just $136. While controversial, this system acknowledges that most divorcing couples have already fought to save their marriages and simply spares them additional procedural pain. Gender equality in Denmark means men aren't obligated to pay for dates. Women typically pay half or exactly what they ordered. Danish men rarely offer seats to women, help with heavy items, or hold doors open. This financial equality applies across all social situations, regardless of income or status. Denmark pioneered women's voting rights, 1915, and has strong female representation in parliament, 37% female MPs in 2015 compared to 18% in the U.S. House. In 2011, Danes elected their first female prime minister, Helle Thorning-Schmidt. In business, 21% of Danish board members are women, achieved without quotas, unlike other European countries. This deeply ingrained equality creates societal harmony, allowing women professional fulfillment while giving men freedom to invest in family life without judgment.